Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I am your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sundays of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. So if you happen to be on the East Coast, that translates to 8:30. And if you're over in Middle Europe, you'll have to check it out because I really don't know how many hours away we are. But, yeah, just do your time zone conversion, and you will be able to listen live, even if it is the middle of the night. Okay, but don't worry. If it happens to be the middle of the night for you, or if you have a hot date tonight, you can't get up, can't sit here and listen to me, then you can always pick it up later at my blog, my website, at survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But my show airs on the first, as I said, on the first and third Sundays of every month at 5:30, and my show is called Another Fork in the Road, and it's for anyone with a brain injury. It's for anyone who is caring for a brain injury person, an injured person, I should say, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. Brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere. And, you know, sad thing is it does. It really does. The Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States living with some form of brain injury. That's not even taking into account our neighbors in Canada and Mexico, or our across the pond neighbors in the UK area, or Europe, or in Asia. You know, this is just 5 million people in the United States that are living with some form of brain injury. But do you know that most folks don't even know about brain injury? And I can tell you that I never did. I never did, not until it came to live on my doorstep. That's when I got it slammed into my face, and then I really started to learn about brain injury. And I hope it doesn't ever have to happen to you, and I hope it never happens to you in the way that it happened to us. But I do hope, too, that you'll take time to learn a little bit about it so you might be prepared, because the odds are not really good. Everybody has a high odd of having a brain injury, which is sad, but it's life. It's true. So on Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks understand what survivors experience and what their caregivers experience too, because that's a whole other avenue that we are looking at. On the third Sunday of each month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, authors, lots of authors, to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And on each first Sunday of the month, I usually host a discussion panel to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression, stress, neural fatigue, anger, memory loss. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So there are various symptoms of brain injury. But tonight, instead of having a panel, all my panelists are really busy tonight, so I'm going to go solo. And this will be my first time going solo in 10 years doing the show, almost 10 years doing the show. But I think that's going to be a lot of fun too in its own way, although it's always fun to chat with other people. But tonight I'm going to be talking about a subject that I know a lot about, and that is caregiving, because I did become a caregiver of a long, long time ago, and I'm going to tell you a little wee bit about me. So especially for those new to my show, here's just a snippet. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005 when my husband David had a brain injury. And you can learn more about that on my blog, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. And this is always the part of the show that I remember to say, have a pencil and paper nearby so you can jot down URLs. I will be sharing things with you that you might want to check out later on, not during the show, but later on, because you don't want to miss anything that I might want to offer to you tonight. So I shared David's and my story in four episodes on this very show, starting in August of 2014. That's why I said I'm nearly coming up on my 10-year mark here already at the Brain Injury Radio Network. The last of my shows, when I did the shows in 2014, I did consecutive shows, the first and the, I think it was first and second, first and third Sundays for a couple of months. And then I did a feature on David himself in November of that year. So at that time, I basically gave you the story, the complete story, not just bits and pieces of it, of how I came onto the brain injury scene after David had a brain injury. So then in 2014, in November, I interviewed David so that he could explain his perspective of having the brain injury. Because, of course, the survivor is going to have a totally different perspective than will the caregiver. Both are very, very important. And both are things that we want to mesh together so that the caregiver and survivor team work well together to benefit each party, each of you. So, so David had, in 2020, I also did a show on David in April of 19. So that would be almost like about 4 years ago. And I wanted to show his perspective on brain injury. And it was a 15 years past for him at that time. And because he is a retired professor of microbiology, I wanted to delve into his understanding, tap into his understanding of the COVID-19 pandemic, because he understood a lot of what was going on there and also was very in tune with other scientists at Columbia to give some more data. So he wanted to give the hands-on kind of information about COVID that we were also struggling to understand and to get. So that was April 19th in 2020. So if you want to listen to that show, again, that goes back to SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. And you can find all my archive shows, more than 200 of them now, on my blog at, again, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. Once you get to the site, just click on the air menu tab. It's under the category section on the right sidebar. So look at the right sidebar, go scoot down all the topics, the categories, and find on the air show menu. The show menu is the important one. There is another one on the air, but the show menu lists all the shows, and it has links to every show. So if you see a show you want to listen to, all you have to do is tap the link, and it will come up. So you can listen to something about stress or organizational skills, problems with that. You can listen to survivors, Deb Brandon. You can listen to caregivers, Jeanette Davidson Mayer, I keep getting that name wrong, Harriet Hoskins. You can listen to lots of different things there. Just go through the menu and see what you come up with, and then click and listen. You can listen along as you're knitting away your granddaughter's blanket, or you can listen along as you're doing the dishes or cooking the dinner. You know, wherever, whatever, there's a lot of good information I think you'll like. So you can also type in if you want to learn more about David and his brain injury, and find out more things that he's involved in here at the Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury site. Just type in his name, David Figurski, same as my last name, Figurski. He had the name first. I borrowed it. So anyhow, again, there's a search box on the right sidebar, and you can just type in a name or type in any of those categories I mentioned or any other category that you might want to see if I've talked about. If it's about brain injury, I've probably touched on it already, so there's probably a show that you can hear. You can also read our complete story in my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. And that book was published by Right Life Publishing, and it was released in November of 2018. And you can find Prisoners, as I so fondly call it, as a print book, as an ebook, and as an audiobook, all at your local book haunts or your local library, which is one of my biggest book haunts. When you read it, please write a review on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Goodreads. A review is a book's best friend. And better yet, it helps to let others know about a good read. And especially those of us in the brain injury community, we need to share our resources with others so that we can help other people and be helped by other people, because the more people you help, the more people help you. That's how I found it's working in this situation. My second book is on submission now to publishers, and it's called Create a Play Yard for Learning. And that book gives readers a bird's eye view into my early first grade classroom. It was written for student teachers, any educator actually, and, of course, for parents who want to know the inner workings of an innovative and creative early education classroom. That would be mine. That would be my room, 106. And basically it gives teachers all kinds of ideas, but it's written of what they might do in their own classrooms that they could take away immediately and use them the next day. Or it gives them ideas, or it gives them theories or thoughts or philosophies. It's written in a way, if you've read Prisoners Without Bars, you'll know that Prisoners is what I like to call it, a beach read. I mean, come on, a book about brain injury doesn't sound like some chick lit book or a beach read, but it reads like one. It reads easily like that. And it's a page turner, I think. It makes you want to keep going. Now, geez, that's me saying all that stuff, and I wrote the darn thing. So I guess I don't know whether you want to trust me or not, but if you don't, go ahead and check it out. See for yourself. And then tell me if you think it is. But I think it's a book that people can really relate to. And even if you've never had a brain injury or never will have a brain injury, I think it's fun to look into somebody's life and see how they manage it, how they manage their problems and things. And I think Create a Play Yard for Learning is that kind of a book, too. It's an easy read. A beach read. So student teachers, take that book to the beach before you start school in September. You know, that, try it. You know, I like it. Okay. My third book is called Conversations Between a Survivor and a Caregiver. And I'm writing that book with my co-author friend, Deb Brandon. Deb Brandon is a survivor of brain injury. She's had 3 brain surgeries in the past 20 years, all within the same amount of time, very close together, and actually probably about 15 years. And so Deb and I are getting together, we're conspiring to write a book. And guess what, folks? It's done. We've been working on this for a couple of years now. And the book is now completed. We're just putting it into its final stages to be set up to send to the publisher soon. So we are excited. It's been a long job, very interesting job, because on this book, you're getting not only the survivors immediate, you know, response to things, but you're also response to topics, I should say, but you're getting the caregiver's response, which often is different from the survivor's response because we're looking through a different lens as a caregiver than is the survivor. So I think that if, you know, as I'm reading through it now, I'm doing my final read through before it goes off. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, we saw it all in bits and pieces. And, you know, like then now we're putting that whole big puzzle together and the picture is starting to show. We were looking at the trees before and now we're seeing the forest. And it's like, oh wow, this is really cool. Well, again, that's me talking and I'm one of the authors of the book. So when it gets out, I'm going to ask you to let me know what you think, because it's your opinion that is mostly valuable and counts more than mine does, actually. So, yeah. So we'll keep you updated on that and let you know. Deb is also a panelist on my show many, many times, and she would have been here tonight if she wasn't busy doing something else, and I'm not even sure what she's doing that's more important than this show, but I guess it is. So anyway, so if you want to learn more about me, then you can go to my website, DonnaFigurski.com. Remember I said I have a blog, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com, and it's all about brain injury. Well, this website is about lots of other things about me, including Prisoners Without Bars. In fact, there's a page up there with all the cast of characters that are in the book. I shouldn't say all, but most of them. Some of them are like doctors and nurses. I couldn't get those. But most of the really important characters in the book are there for you to see. So as you read through the book, you can say, oh, so that's Cousin Trish. Oh, so that's Angeli. Oh, wow. One of our best friends. Okay, so that's there, or our relatives that flew in on the event and on the emergency. So yeah, so and I think it makes it a little more fun that way, and it gives you a lot of backstory to the story too. It also gives you lots of other things on that blog, including bookityblog.com. Bookityblog. Just put it into Google. Bookity Blog and put Figurski, because there is somebody else that used Bookity Blog, and it's something else. I have no idea, but it's not mine. So put in Bookity Blog and Figurski, and you'll come up with my blog post on that website, and gives you lots of interesting stories, lots about teaching, lots about brain injury, lots about Little Pup, who I just adopted a couple years ago, and another little pup since then. It's just a lot of stuff about me. So if you're interested at all, check it out. Yeah, do it. So now I think it's time to get on with our show, and I'm hoping you're going to find it fun and informative, and I hope that you'll visit the shows of the other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio Network, because there are shows almost every night from 7 o'clock till 10 p.m. Pacific time. Again, make those conversions, folks. And you can also go to braininjuryradio.com and look up our shows. There will be different hosts, different nights. I have all mine on that blog, on that site as well, but I think it's easy for you to find them if you go to my Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury blog, because you can look right down the dates and see the titles immediately and be able to click and get right to it. So that makes it, I think it makes it easier for you. So, yeah. And then on the weekends, you can tune in at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time to listen to your favorite shows then. And, of course, my show is on the first and third Sunday of each month. I also hope you'll listen to Lisa Dreyer's show, which is on the second and fourth Sunday of every month. And if there's a fifth Sunday, folks, sorry, we're both off that night. So Brain Injury Radio broadcasts across the United States. It's in every single state, and it airs live in 36 countries. Wow, that's really cool. But again, if you can't hear it live, go to the blog and find it. And the greatest thing about it is all the shows are archived. My shows, all the radio shows are archived. Go to braininjuryradio.com, and you can listen to any show anytime, 24/7. Yeah, can you imagine listening to shows for 24/7? Oh, my. Anyhow, now sit back, relax, and I hope you're going to enjoy my show tonight. My show tonight is called Random Thoughts on Caregiving. And when I came up to this idea of, okay, I'm not going to prepare a show for a panel, I'm going to just talk and talk about, and I said, what do I know best? And I said, well, since being a brain injury, I've learned an awful lot about a lot of things, but I think what I know best is caregiving, of course, because I was thrust into that deep end almost 20 years ago, and I had to learn to sink or swim. I didn't want to sink. I didn't even have to learn to sink. I could do that easily, but I had to learn to swim. And if those were my choices, sink or swim, and so I chose swimming. And if you know, sinking is passive. You can just go and go down, you know, and not even do anything. Swimming is active. It's really energetic, and you're moving, and you're struggling, and you're pushing and pulling, and it's hard, but it's also worth it. I mean, it's worth your life if you're fighting for it. It's worth your life if you're fighting for your survivor's life. So let me just talk a little bit about caregiving tonight. So caregiving is, you know, for the brain injured survivor, can be a really seriously stressful situation. And caregivers may feel as trapped as their loved one does feel. The loved one may be trapped within the brain injury, and the caregiver may not have the physical problems that the survivor has, and most likely does not, but they have feelings of entrapment too. And those feelings may lead to despair, and further, they may lead to guilt or selfishness, you know, and it's normal. That's natural. You don't berate yourself. Don't flog yourself on the back if those are the feelings you're having. But we're going to try to discuss them and understand them a little bit. But oftentimes, caregivers don't take care of themselves, and that can lead to a number of problems. And you might think, well, I don't have time to take care of myself. And I understand. I totally understand that, because I felt that same way. I didn't have time for me. David was in dire straits. I needed to take care of him. He needed me for his every movement. So I was focused on him. So what happens then? What kind of problems can occur? Well, exhaustion is one of the top ones on the list. There are a lot of top ones. I think you could probably say everyone is a top one, frankly. But exhaustion, sleep deprivation. And when someone is sleep deprived, they aren't just sleepy. It's not just like, oh, I feel sleepy, I'm tired. It's exhaustion. It's fatigue. It's not being able to do anything. It's about making poor decisions, because sleep deprivation can affect your whole persona. Everything about you can be affected. You might have been a happy-go-lucky, everything is fine, life is peaches and roses and apricots and unicorns. Where'd all the fruit come from and then the unicorn? I have no idea. But anyhow, and rainbows. Let's put rainbows in there. Rainbows and unicorns. Somebody just said that the other day and I liked it. So, you might have been that way your whole life, but then you might find yourself easily agitated or angry, and you might even find yourself losing your patience with your survivor. And that's something that maybe you're not familiar with, because maybe that wasn't something that was happening to you before, especially if you were in that world of rainbows and unicorns. You know, things were going well, you were adapting well, you could flow with the stream, move with the wind, and not be worried about things. You know, you just kind of took them in your stride. But now something really huge, something really big has taken over, and it's really jostled your life. And now you have to figure out how to to live, how to swim, how to swim so you don't want to sink, basically. So that scenario is just simply not good for anyone, not for a survivor, not for a caregiver, for no one. And so what do? You have to, how do you get, when you're sleep deprived, you're sleep deprived. You obviously aren't being sleep deprived because you want to be. It's because of things that are happening in your life around you. Another big problem might be poor eating habits, eating on the run, or choosing the wrong kinds of foods can lead to lots of problems and sometimes loads of weight. The lack of proper nutrition can directly affect your health, and it can put the caregiver into a position of maybe needing care for himself or herself, depending on who he or she is, because you don't have time to sit down and prepare a meal. You don't have time. No, you're not sitting to prepare the meal, but you don't have time to prepare the meal. You don't have time to sit down and eat it. You know, so it's easier to grab a bag of potato chips. Well, if you're in that kind of a situation where you have to eat on the run, grab an apple, grab a banana, grab something a little more nutritious. Sometimes those foods don't really take precedence over the piece of donut or the bag of chips or the candy bar. Those are always a lot easier to grab, a lot more fun to grab, but they don't really provide you with a whole lot. They might provide you with quick energy for a few minutes, but it goes away. It's not your best thing. So that definitely is not a good thing for a caregiver or a survivor, but we're talking about caregivers, so a caregiver. So another major problem is being overworked. Oh, yeah. Now that can lead to resentment. You had a life before. You were managing it all fine, those rainbows and unicorns again. You were managing everything fine. You were happy. Nothing was really causing you any stress in your life. Well, if that really is the case before the brain injury, then you probably really were living in a land of rainbows and unicorns. But I mean, because everybody has their issues. But you know what I'm talking about. I'm saying that things were better. Things were easier. And all of a sudden, they are no longer easy. They are really difficult. And confusing too, because you don't know what's going on and you're kind of working your way through this mire, what do I like to think of it as? Quicksand, you know, when you go into a swamp or something and all of a sudden you start sinking in the sand and the mud and you're going down, down. I've never had that happen, obviously, but you've read about it. You've seen it on YouTube or on movies or something, and there's something, you know, and all of a sudden you can't get out. It's pulling you under and you have no control over it, and it's scary, you know. So that's the kind of a feeling that one might have as a caregiver when everything is totally out of kilter. So you're overworked. You're not only doing your own jobs, which you manage well, as we said, but you're also having to pick up the slack, and you're doing the jobs of what the survivor once did. And you're still caring for his needs, and you also have to care for your needs. But his needs now are also much bigger than they may have ever been before. I mean, for example, David and I always split our household jobs, you know. He took out the trash. I think I did, actually, but I always say he did. So he took out the trash, maybe did something, and he paid the bill, and he did the laundry, and I cooked the dinner, and I cleaned up after dinner, but usually he helped me on those things. But we had our division of labor, let's put it. It just came naturally that way. He was better at financial stuff than I was. I would have had us in debt, probably, or never paid a bill or whatever. I wasn't good at that. Let's put it that way. I wasn't good at it. Why? Because I never learned it. Why? Because I didn't have to, and because I didn't want to, and somebody was doing it, so I didn't have to do it. So I wasn't good at that. And David, you know, the best he could do was cut an onion in the kitchen for dinner. And that's what he had for dinner. If I wasn't able to make dinner some nights, he would just cut an onion, put it between two pieces of white Wonder Bread, you know. We're going back a lot of years, folks. I'm talking about when we were first married many, many, many years ago, where that would be somehow he would gain his sustenance from that if I wasn't home to cook dinner or something. So it worked out well, is what I'm trying to say. I took care of the meals and the dinner. He took care of the financials. And we had a nice split. And, of course, there are a lot of other things, but you don't need to know everything. It's just a matter of getting the idea that we had a nice split. So now David has a brain injury, and we're talking about being overworked. Okay, so I'm not only cooking the dinner, cleaning up. Remember I said that he took care of the laundry? Well, guess who's taking care of the laundry now? Put that on my side of the Red Rover line. And let's see, paying the bills. Oh, my gosh, who's paying the bills now? Not David. He's over there on the other side. Put that on my Red Rover line. I'm pulling my weight over here for sure. Okay, so basically what's going on is, I'm having to take up all of the slack. I'm having to, because we still have to run our house. We still have to pay the mortgage. We still have to pay the bills. I still have to go to the ATM, which I didn't know how to do. You know, all of those things began to be my problem. Where David was easily able to do them, I'm not going to say he liked doing them. He didn't. But he was able to do them easily. And for me, it was alien. It was totally a different world. I had no idea. So I had to do it, though. I had to learn. I had to figure it out. So now, again, let's go back. I'm doing my stuff, my normal stuff, and my job. I'm a teacher. I went out to teach first graders or third graders every day. So I'm doing that job. I have two children. But at the time of David's brain injury, the children were grown. So they're not really in this equation at that point. But prior to that, when the kids were home, that, you know, it was my job to get them off to school. It was my job to get them to their track meets and their soccer games and their whatever else, gymnastics. That was part of my stuff. You know, so I would have still been doing that. Let's see, I was still cooking dinner. I was doing all the things that I normally would have still had done. Now I picked up David's slack, which we already talked about, the laundry, the bills, the trash, all that stuff came over to my side now. And I had to take care of David too, because he couldn't do anything. He was injured so desperately that he was unable to do anything. He was unable to talk. He was unable to walk. He was unable to do anything for himself. And I'm going to go into some of that stuff later. So all of that came onto my side. So do you see what I'm saying about exhaustion, overwork, not maybe eating properly because there's no time to get all this stuff? And part of the eating process was making mushy foods for David. So I definitely had to get that done. I wasn't eating it, but I had to make sure he had his proper food, his good nutrition, because we were trying to get him out of this big slump that he got himself into with that brain injury. Well, he didn't actually get himself into it. It happened to him, but he was in it. And so I had to, you know, worry about his health. Okay, so you can see, overworked. All of those things got tied in together. Okay, so what happens then? What happens? Resentment. Resentment can also creep up. It can creep up when you don't even know it. Because, of course, now, for me, I said to the neurosurgeons, every one of them, he had three neurosurgeons, open up his brain. Well, he had two, actually, because one opened it twice. He, like, did in there so well the first time, he went back again. But so David had three open brain surgeries within 2 weeks by two different neurosurgeons. And every time they took him off to do another surgery, I said to the neurosurgeon, I didn't actually say it, I pleaded, please just give him back to me. I don't care how you give him back to me, give him back to me. Never did I think, you know, in any of my wildest dreams that you could come back with your brain so damaged that it impacts your physical, your every physical thing. Given that I know that now, I would still say the same thing. Give him back to me. I don't care how you give him back to me. And frankly, Dave and I are both very grateful that all, I mean, and I say all, let's emphasize that word, all he has wrong with him are physical disabilities, no cognitive, no psychological, no emotional, no behavioral. So we are really very, very fortunate. So the doctor didn't hold up his end of the deal. Well, he did actually. He did give him back to me. I didn't say how he had to give him back. So he did end up held up his end of the deal. He gave him back to me. And I have David here in my life for almost 20 years that I wasn't expected to have him in my life at all. He was given a 1 in 600 chance of living through his first surgery. Think about that, folks. A 1 in 600 chance. Okay. It got reduced to a 1 in 200 chance because we didn't wait and do another CT scan. If we had done a second CT scan to see if his brain was improving, it would have been a 1 in 600 because he went into the surgery as soon as possible. It went into a 1 in 20 chance of living. Still, that is horrible odds, horrible odds. But he gave him back to me. So I'm very excited and happy about that. We've had almost 20 years together since his brain injury. That's really remarkable, folks. So, yes. But let's go back now to resentment. Yeah, those resentment can lead to feelings of guilt. You know, you resent all the overwork that you're having to do. You resent having to take out the trash. You resent having to do the financials, pay the bills. You resent having to do the taxes every April. Actually, I got them done already. I had to learn all that, guys. I had no clue. Taxes, what are they? I would have liked to just stay that way. David always did those, so it would have been nice if he always, you know, continued to do those. But he's not able to sustain that kind of energy to do that kind of stuff. So yeah, so that all falls onto me now. So yeah, I could be resentful. Yeah, it won't do me any good, but I could be. And then feeling resentful is going to make you feel guilty because your person can't do it, and you need to help him or her. So you can feel resentful for helping them, or you can just kind of brush it under the rug. Maybe that's it. It's a kind of a catch-22 scene. You don't want to resent the person, yet you might. Okay? I'm very fortunate that I am just so grateful that my husband is here with me. And, oh, I must say, he does do the laundry now. And that's not why I'm grateful, folks. But it's a perk. he does. He's taken up the laundry. He's actually taken up the cleanup after dinner. Oh, wow. That was a hard one for me to let go because I felt like I'm sitting here usually reading or playing a game. At that point, I usually work most of the day, but then after dinner, I do play a game on my iPad, okay? And that was hard for me to watch him get up and kind of stumble around the kitchen and get the dinner cleaned up. Now, little secret here. I always do as much as I can cleaning up before we sit down to dinner. So I try to make it only the dinner dishes and a few other extra things that I didn't have time to get finished before dinner. But, I mean, I do that because I don't want him out there doing all this kind of stuff. But, again, it's a perk. I'm glad he's doing that again. Did he take back the taxes? Well, you already know that because I said I did them. No, I've been doing taxes for 19 years. Can you believe that? It was pretty hard. And I'm not talking about doing them. It's just gathering all the stuff and knowing what to take to the accountant. But that was hard enough. I was totally in a lost world there. But it's, I figured it out. In fact, this year, after 19 years of doing it, I finally think I figured out kind of a template that I might, so I'm actually looking forward to doing them next year to see if my template works. Okay, that was sick. I shouldn't be looking forward to doing taxes ever. But I do think it's going to be easier. I think it's going to be easier, not so confounding and complicated and confusing, all those con words. So hopefully we'll see what happens, and I'll let you know next April 2025, how I did. So anyway, so what do caregivers do to relieve some of the tension then? Because obviously we just talked about a lot of tension, a lot of angst, a lot of emotional distress that people are going through as caregivers. And truthfully, the first 5 years of ours was probably my most difficult because David wasn't able to do all that stuff that I just said he is doing back then. All of that stuff has been, kind of interjected into our lives and into our schedules as the years have passed. So it's gotten to be a little bit easier. Just not having to do the laundry. Are you kidding? I mean, I never did the laundry. I'll tell you the story why I didn't do the laundry. When we were first married, I don't have time for things like this. You know, it's a job that needs to get done, be over it. Well, so I would take all of our clothes and throw it in one wash. It could have reds or grays or blacks or whites. It didn't make any difference to me. It was going into the laundry soap. It was all going to get cleaned. Well, I didn't realize that all the whites were going to come out pink. And David wasn't too happy with that. So guess what? I never did laundry again. So that's just a secret for you people out there who are in the laundry force. If you don't want to do it, put a lot of red stuff in with your whites and see what happens. Make sure it's something you don't really want, you know. But, yeah, and see what happens. Maybe you'll luck out. Maybe you won't have to do the laundry. I mean, I haven't done laundry in years and years and years. And then, of course, once David had his brain injury, I was doing the laundry. And I never put reds with whites again. But I didn't separate like David does. No way. It still all goes into one load. But I might not put blacks and whites together. I might not put reds and whites together. But most of the other stuff, toss it in. It comes out clean. So, yeah. But anyhow, I don't have to do that now. So there's probably no chance of red laundry in my home anymore. So what do we do? What do we do to relieve some of the tension, to relieve some of the problems, to relieve some of the resentment, to relieve the overwork, the exhaustion? What do we do? Caregivers, what do we do? I know a lot of you are, shaking your heads, and I wish I knew. Well, some of the things that I think are important are not easy to do, but important, very important and critical to saving your own sanity. Let's put it that way. Take time for yourself. Now, that sounds really good, doesn't it? Take time for yourself. Boy, I'd love to do that, huh? Yeah. Especially, go back to those first 5 years. And even more so, go back to the first 6 months maybe when David couldn't even move from a chair to a chair or a chair to his wheelchair. He couldn't move from his bed to his wheelchair or his walker or whatever he was using at the time. He needed me for every movement, for every transport like that, transfer. So how do you take time for yourself when you have got all of that stuff and everything we just talked about earlier? How do you take time for yourself? It's hard. It's really, really hard. And you know what? I didn't do it. So I'm not really the best person to tell you what to do, but I've learned. So I do have that under my belt. I do know what is right to do. I guess just can't say I did it, but I'm hoping that you will find it important enough to do it. Do it a little bit. Just try. So even if it's for a few minutes a day, even just a 2 minutes even, can just be that relief that you need, that time to sigh and take a deep breath. But set aside a little bit of time to do something that you enjoy, whether it's reading a book. Sometimes you might want to read a book. And now, that doesn't mean reading the whole book. That might be reading a few pages or a chapter if you're lucky. Take a bubble bath. David laughs at me when I say that one. He says, Donna, nobody takes bubble baths. And I said, David, yes, they do. And a lot of people said, oh, my gosh, yeah, I love to take bubble baths. And especially if you throw in some of those Epsom salts and put in some lavender. Oh, heaven, except I never do that. I don't have time for that even now. But it sounds heavenly, doesn't it? It sounds good. Turn off the light in the bathroom. Well, maybe just like a little nightlight, a little nightlight. And I do that. I'll take a shower with turning the lights down just to have more of a semblance of relaxation, more of a semblance of, yeah, I'm in a spa, you know, dream on, Donna. But anyhow, it does kind of give you those feelings. So do it if that's something that you might enjoy. Sip a cup of coffee or tea. You know, something kind of makes you feel pampered. Those are things that that you can do for yourself that don't take a lot of time. After about 5 years, and I think I'm going to get into that part later on. I'm not sure if I'll have time, but I was able to implement more things into my life that helped me out. Just taking a little bit of time just for me so I could stop and not do anything or walk around the block. You know, yeah, it's just things like that. So what else can you do? Another suggestion, find other caregivers. Find people who share the same kinds of experiences with you. And then brainstorm ideas. That's a great outlet. But then you go, how do you even do that? I mean, back in 2005 when David had his brain injury, I had no idea. I did know one person. I shouldn't say that. I knew two people, actually, because my nephew had a brain injury 3 weeks before David, right before Christmas of 2004. Can you believe that? They're not blood related, so it's not hereditary. But he had a brain injury that he is living with now for the rest of his life. And then David had one. So I learned about brain injury 3 weeks before David had his traumatic brain injury. And then David had one. It's like, come on, how can that happen? How can that be? Twice. Lightning doesn't usually strike twice in the same place, but it kind of did here in the same family. So I did have, my brother and my sister-in-law, those are the two people I was really talking to about it. But I was talking to them about their son first, and then it became both of our loved ones. So I did have something that somebody kind of understood, but it's a different thing. You know, it's a different thing when it's a child, a grown child, not living in your home, and your husband, your spouse, your best friend. It poses totally different types of problems. So although my brother and sister-in-law could understand brain injury, they couldn't really understand the brain injury of a spouse. And I don't think anybody can unless it's happened to them. So who did I talk to that understood it? Judy, my friend Judy from Columbia Presbyterian Hospital, because her husband had a brain injury 13 days after David. Yeah, is that crazy? I think it was 13 days. 3 weeks. So it was 3 weeks after David. 2 weeks. Doesn't make any difference. They were both in the hospital. They were just cubicles away from each other. I saw Judy in the waiting room there, And because I had already been there about for several weeks, I felt like I had a handle on the ropes. I knew what was going on. I saw Judy's angst. I saw her worry and her fear. And I thought, I have to help her because I knew some things now. I mean, I knew about JPEGs and I knew about come on, Donna, you can do it. The hole in your throat, whatever that is called, I forget. Oh, it's just evading me, but I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about. When you're ventilated, when you're on a ventilator, tracheotomy. Oh, gosh, I could see the T, it just, the rest of it wouldn't come. But yeah, so I knew about those things. I knew about the warming blanket. So I was able to tell Judy when she told me that her husband had to have those things, I said, yeah, David had it too. So it wasn't like it was so foreign to her. So Judy knew what it was like at having a spouse with a brain injury. But even Judy's and my situation changed. We're different from each other because her husband had no physical disabilities. He looked perfectly fine. When after time went by, several months, he was able to go home. He was able to walk out in his garden. He was able to go to the restaurant. He didn't look like he had a brain injury, where David couldn't even get up out of his walker or out of a chair. Not out of his walker, out of his wheelchair, or out of the bed. His speech was all distorted. His face was distorted. His arm was twitching with ataxia. It was so obvious there was something wrong with David. So Judy could not understand the issues that I was having. But I couldn't understand the issues that she was having either, because Judy's husband, who looked perfectly fine, had a lot of invisible problems going on. He had a lot of anger going on inside of him. He had a lot of memory loss. I'm not going to remember everything that he had with him, but he had a lot of things going on that weren't able to be seen but were causing great distress in their lives. And now I'm not saying that he had these, but you could have organizational skills loss. You could have fear, all kinds of fears to go anywhere because wherever your injury happened, maybe you don't want to be at that place again. There are all kinds of weird things that can go on in your brain, believe me. And so even I could talk with Judy, but even we weren't even on the same page because each brain injury is different. And nobody is going to have the same exact brain injury. So, yeah. Finding other people to talk to, someone that's going through something similar. And if you can find somebody local, that's even better. Judy and I weren't local. We still lived about 40 miles away from each other, so it was not easy to get to see each other. Fortunately, there's email. You know, we were in the age of computer email and all that, so we were lucky that way. And Judy and I did travel into New York City. She lived up in upstate New York, north of New York City, and I live west of New York City in New Jersey. So we each took our train to get into New York City and met at a restaurant a few times. So that was good. But we had each other. We knew kind of what each other was going through. So it's really wonderful if you can find somebody like that you can relate to. Or a group, an in-person group would be wonderful if it works for you. David, now I never did. I never went to a caregivers group. I didn't know of any, and I wouldn't have had time, number one. I wouldn't have, remember we talked about that earlier? I wouldn't have been able to leave David. He wasn't able to be left alone ever for a long time. So I wouldn't have been able to use that. So it was fortunate that they did have online groups, but I'm going to tell you that too. It wasn't until, 9 years later that I found the support groups online. So I went this alone for 9 years with just me and David. He was my support group and I was his support group of one. So, but you know, sometimes it's impossible. I was going to say it's hard, but it's impossible when your survivor requires 100% attention for you to get away. You just can't. So the next best thing, I think, then, is finding that online support group. Now, if I were talking to you before 2014, and that's when I started this radio show on the Brain Injury Radio Network, but if I were talking to you prior to that, I wouldn't be able to give you this advice because I had no clue. So the next best thing is finding that online support group. And there are many on social media. Facebook itself has tons of them. Unfortunately, though, like I said, when David had his first brain injury nearly 20 years ago, Facebook was in its infancy. And it didn't offer the many and varied groups it has today. Or if it did, I certainly didn't know about them. They never contacted me to tell me. Shame on them. Being silly. Okay. I only found about the brain injury sites in 2014 when I discovered Facebook on social media part. Now, I was already on Facebook for writing, and I was a moderator for a chat room, AOL chat room, for writing, children's writing. I don't know if any of you ever listened to that. If you're ever in that, you might have heard me way back when chatting away with things about things. But now I belong to many groups on Facebook. There are sites that cater to only survivors, so I can't belong to that, of course. There are sites that cater to families of survivors, yes, or specific types of brain injury, including stroke or traumatic brain injury or angioma, cavernous angiomas like Deb goes to. And there are sites just for humor or sites designed for venting about brain injury. These are all brain injury sites I'm talking about. There are tons more, millions more, I'm sure, of other sites, thousands. And there are sites for parents of children with a brain injury because, as I always say, brain injury is not discriminating. And, yeah, children have brain injury too, very often. One of my favorite sites that I belong to is one that is solely for caregivers of spouses or partners. And that there, I mean, because there are no survivors in there, people will be able to ask honest questions and get serious, honest answers without fear of anyone being hurt, any feelings being hurt. Because sometimes when someone's talking about resentment or guilt, the survivor could take it to heart. Even if a person's not talking about them, they might take it to heart and say, oh, maybe my person thinks that way. Maybe my caregiver feels that way about me. And so you have to be more careful when you're in a mixed group because you don't want to cause extra trauma, mental trauma for anyone. So though I've never met any of the people, I've come to meet many men and women in the groups, and I look forward to hearing about their daily lives or their struggles or their celebrations too. Oh gosh, yes, especially their celebrations. But if I can help with something that somebody's struggling with, and just say, well, maybe you want to try this. It might not work for you, but you could try it and see if it does. How helpful is that? Something you may not have thought of. That would be good for somebody else. So I really like that idea. And one of the things, I'm going to go back to celebrating events. On my blog, Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury, I have a section, a topic, a category called Itty Bitty Giant Steps. I love that title. I love it. Because why? Because we're celebrating the teeniest, tiniest things that are huge to somebody's life that has a brain injury. And one that I remember all the time and I love to talk about is one young woman, and I'm sorry that I don't remember her name at this point, but I followed her story a long time and we talked a lot and everything, and then I don't know whether she's even on Facebook anymore. We drifted, I guess, away. And one of the things she talked about one day, she got on and she was so excited. And she said, now mind you, she was a woman about 20, in her 20s to 30s. And she was so excited and said, I tied my shoe today. Now, of course, that was typed out, but I could hear it just like that. I tied my shoe today. You know, the excitement, the joy that I could see sent across the waves to me. I really got it. And I thought, a lot of people would say, yeah, so what? You tied your shoe, you know? If you are a four-year-old or a five-year-old, that might be really remarkable because they're learning how to tie their shoes and making those bunny ears and twisting them around. And then mom and dad go, oh, my gosh, my Einstein tied his shoes today. Yay! Or her shoes. But this was a 20-something who tied her shoes. And yet, to me, I was that cheering person. I was that cheering person. I was like, oh, my gosh, that is amazing. She'd been trying and trying and trying, and she did it. That's wonderful. And those are the kinds of things that that caregivers live for, those little tiny itty-bitty giant steps. I'll tell you another story. This one's personal to me. This was one of our itty-bitty giant steps. Remember I said David did the laundry, but after his brain injury, could no longer do it. So, of course, I was doing it. We were standing near the washing machine one time, and he was trying to explain something to me about the washing machine. Probably went straight over my head, but nonetheless. I mean, he's doing the laundry again now, I told you, and I have no idea how to use these two machines sitting in the next room to me. I have no idea and have no desire to learn. I know, that's sad, but it's true. So anyway, we're talking. Now, go back, because this is within months of his brain injury. He's still on, maybe it's more like, could be more like a year at this point, because he's on a walker or a cane, a four-pronged cane or something. But we're standing there, and he's kind of leaning on the dryer, and something fell. Now, this is a man who has no balance, can't walk, no balance. And all of a sudden, something fell, and he bent down without thinking and picked it up. And I thought, holy moly, I was so excited. That was so cool when he was able to do that. It was little. I mean, it's just somebody bent down and picked up something. Big deal, right? But for him, it was so amazing. And he even looked at me like, oh, I just bent down and picked up something. What's the big deal? And I was like, David, you can't even walk. You don't have balance. How do you bend down? Have you ever tried bending down with no balance? Well, first off, you have to have no balance to be able to try that. But bending down is a tricky situation, and your whole body has to stay in balance because you're folding it up in like an accordion style, and you have to have balance in order to do that. And so that was our itty-bitty giant step. I wanted to tell the world I was so excited. So, yeah, those are some of the things that come with being a caregiver of someone with a brain injury. And those are some of the things that you might do. I'm sure there are tons more that you can do. So I want to talk to you about, well, we've been talking about this pretty much, about self-care for caregivers. And when we think of caregivers, I'm going to stop for just a second and ask, you, the audience, name one caregiver, one type of caregiver. I bet you mostly thought of a person who goes to somebody's house and has to care for them medically. You might have thought of the nursing staff in hospitals. You might have thought about folks who care for the elderly in nursing facilities or in assisted living facilities. Yeah. And they're all caregivers, and I thought about them right away. But then I turned my thinking around 100% when my husband David had a traumatic brain injury. I now know about home health care services. They're caregivers. The traveling nurses are caregivers. Therapists are caregivers. And all the medical support staff in the hospital, not just your doctors, not just your nurses, but what about your aides, your caregivers, your therapy people? They are too. I mentioned therapists up there anyhow. But they're all helping out in the care field. And so prior to David's brain injury, in reality, I never gave much thought about caregiving. You know, I just didn't think about that because it wasn't on my radar. I thought maybe at some point my mother or father, as they age, may need to be in a nursing home with caregivers. But I didn't think about it in my own, you know, little bubble of a world. So, but in different stages of my life, when I start to think, I realize that I've been a caregiver. And I just never realized it. In fact, I think we're all caregivers at some time or another. Think about it. I'm giving you a little airtime here. Think about it. How have you been a caregiver? What have you done in your life to be a caregiver? As the oldest sibling, I was often a caregiver to my younger brothers and sisters. How many of you have ever had to babysit your mom, your brothers or sisters, or take care of them while mom's cooking dinner, or take them to the park so mom can have a quiet little time at home or dad can have a quiet time? Yeah, as a teenager, I babysat the neighborhood kids. I was caregiving. I was getting paid for it, too. 50 cents an hour, guys. That's true. Raising two children, that also tells you how old I am. Oh, my God. What did you do, Donna? Anyhow, raising two children to adulthood was my ultimate caregiving, or so I thought. Yeah, if you're a mama or a papa or a bubba like my son is, you are a caregiver. You're caregiving that little child that you brought into the world or fostered or adopted or whatever. Yeah, you're a caregiver. Little did I know that I would be thrust into the biggest caregiving event of my life. And that event wouldn't end. It's never going to end. Not until death do us part. We took that vow of marriage, and I will love to spend every minute with my husband. Even hopefully after death. We'll see what happens after that. Anyhow, so many mothers, fathers, grannies, grandpas, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, I hope I got everybody in there, I'm not sure, take part in caregiving every day. But most never give it a thought. They take it in stride. I could have friends, too. Friends often become caregivers for you. I have my neighbor friend just had a medical event. I made a huge pot of stew. Well, actually it wasn't stew, it was ham and bean soup. It was yummy. And I took her and her husband a big bowl of it, a big pot of it, so that they would have something. So I was being a caregiver to my neighbor. So, yeah, you can be caregivers to other people, too, as friends. So but did you know that there are more than 65 million caregivers in the United States of America? 65 million caregivers. And that does not include the typical parents' caregivers. We're not including them. Mm-mm. That's you have a child, you're an automatic caregiver, but we're not putting them into that number. And it doesn't include the paid medical support folks either. So that number reflects family members who are offering unpaid voluntary care to their ill, their disabled, or their elderly. They are the caregivers. 65 million people in the United States alone. Again, I say, think, add in the numbers from Canada, our neighbors up north, or add in our neighbors from the south, Mexico. Pop in the UK again, or Europe, or Asia, or Africa. Pop in anybody in this world, and can you imagine how astronomical that number will rise? Wow. So we have to realize that serious events happen in everyone's lives, and they often require a caregiver. And sometimes it's for a short while, and oftentimes it's for long-term care, chronic illness, disabilities, stemming from any number of reasons, such, for example, memory loss, Alzheimer's, as the boomers are moving up in age right now, many of them are starting to face that serious problem of Alzheimer's, of not remembering, the memory loss, and other forms of dementia. The brain just gets tired, folks. They've used up, this is just an easy way for me to think about it. Your mind is like a, your brain is like a computer storage disk, and you only have so much room up there. And what do you do when your computer gets full? It starts to shut down. It starts to slow down. When you're, and I know this, folks, I know it a lot, very, very well, because it happens every time I get a computer, and I just keep adding to it and adding to it and adding to it. And years later, the computer is like going slower and slower and slower, and pretty soon it's like, your memory is full. Please delete some things. Well, sometimes I don't even have the memory to know what to delete. That's true. But anyhow, and there's a good movie. I'm going to share this with you about the brain and the storage of memory that I think is really cool, because I'm serious when I say that our brains get overwhelmed. I mean, think about it. If you've been on this planet for 50 years or 60 or 70 or go to 90, you stored a lot of memory up there. You stored a lot of things. A lot of them you've dumped, too. You totally got rid of them because they weren't important. And I was informed today that my brain must have dumped a memory from 2000, and I think it was 17, of a movie that I watched with David. And we watched it again last night, and we had no idea that we watched it before. Now, that scared me right away. It's like, holy geez, what's happening? Am I okay? But then David reminded me, he's like, you can't keep everything up in your brain. There are some things that just automatically go by the wayside because they aren't important. I still remember my childhood address. You know, I remember what the house looked like and all that kind of stuff. I remember what we had for dinner last night and that kind of stuff. But did I remember that movie? You think I'd remember something out of it, but I didn't. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that's scary. But it's not. It wasn't even that memorable last night. So hopefully I won't. But the trailer, the picture, like the book on the cover, kind of enticed me, and I wanted to see it. And so we watched it, and then when David went to record that we watched it, he said, guess what? We watched it already. And neither of us actually remembered it. So it was okay. I enjoyed it again, but it wasn't anything to write home about. So maybe that's why the brain gets rid of some stuff. It has to. It can't keep everything up there. And so I think that's what's happening to people with, you know, that when you get older, your brain is filling up. And I promised to tell you the movie. It's called Inside Out. It's a Disney movie. I'm not usually a good animated movie viewer. And I'm always surprised, though. I'm always surprised, like especially when they're Disney movies. And you say, I'm going to go watch Cinderella, and you know, but then you watch it, and it's like, oh, my God, they're so cute. But anyhow, Inside Out is a movie about the inside of your brain. And it actually takes place, it starts on the outside in from a little girl's apartment. But then it goes up into her brain, and it talks about all the emotions that are involved in your person, your persona, your anger, your happiness, your, what are all the emotions? Your fear. I think they address five of them, sadness. Another one, I can't remember it, but they address each one of those emotions, and they talk about each one, and each one is a little person in the brain, and of course their emotion is the most important for them. And then there's the memory dump place. There's a little place that if it goes down this hole, it's going to get stored. And if you go down the hole and look down there, you're going to see file cabinets. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands of them lining the walls of your brain or of this room. And little people running around to get memories. Like, oh, I asked David about, do you remember when so-and-so kicked the ball through the window. And he has to, his little person in his brain starts running around like crazy to go find that memory and grabs it out of the folder and says, yeah, I do. I remember that. That happened in Timbuktu, you know, whatever. So it's just a really cute movie. We've seen it once or we've seen it twice for sure, maybe three times, and I'm willing to see it again. It's really worth your while to get a, kind of an inside story of what happens in the brain or what happens if you have a brain injury and you get deflected. You're going down this path, and all of a sudden the path is broken, and you can't go. And the little choo-choo is going chugga, 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 ah, because there's a deep chasm. Now what are you going to do? Go backwards a little bit, go on to another track, work your way around it. It might take you another couple of days to get to where you wanted to go, but you got there maybe. And remember when you say, oh, I it was on the tip of my tongue and I can't find it now? Maybe that's what's happening in your brain then. You got to the chasm. You can't remember that what day you were supposed to do something. And then 2 days later, it pops in your brain because your little train went the detour and finally got to it. I don't know. It's kind of cool, I think. So given all of that, I'm going to have to stop now because I can't believe that I only got to 3 out of 6 pages of notes. So guess what? I'm going to continue on this the next time I have to have a solo show. But this was fun. I really enjoyed having this and being able to spend my evening chatting with you and hoping that you got some little thing out of it. Yeah. So right now we're going to, I'm just putting my start here on my notes so I remember for next time. And we're going to have to say goodnight for today already. Because, of course, another show will be coming up, and we don't want to delay any hosts that might be wanting to get on and do their show. So, and let me just find my notes for getting out of this show. And they are here. I just don't know where. All righty. Okay, here we go. Here we go. This is pretty much, I like to say that, I like to give you kind of the same thing on this. It's, so that I make sure I get everything in. But I usually say thank you to my guests at this part for sharing so much of what they know. So I'm going to say to me, thanks, Donna. I had fun anyhow. So, and you can always learn more about me at DonnaFigurski.com. And or go to my Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury.com site. So two sites there. You can read interviews of other survivors, of TBI survivors and caregivers on my blog at SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. And there are all kinds of resources there. One of them I already told you about was Itty Bitty Giant Steps. Brain Injury Resources is another one. The show menu is up there, so go to that one for sure so you can get to hear other shows. Don't forget you can read about my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, and you can read about it at DonnaFigurski.com. Of course, you can order it from any of your book haunts, library, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, indie bookstores, wherever books are sold. You can get my book online, too, of course. And remember I said it came in print, Kindle, ebook form, and as an audio, and I am the reader for that. Boy, that was a trip to do that. On my next show, that's up for grabs yet. I'm still going to be talking about that one, so that's in the planning. And remember to tune in every second and fourth Sunday at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time to Lisa Dreyer. She is the host of Mess with MS. So if you love my show, please tell 10 of your friends. And, well, if you hated it, sorry, but tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me, too. So I will see you again on April 21st of 2024, and I look forward to chatting with you again. So at that point, I'm going to say good night to everybody. Have a great week. Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. That's so, so important. All right, folks. Until then, bye.